This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. Coming up, Subversity with Dan Zhang. Today we're going to look at juvenile injustice. What happens to young people who are put in prison for life? And with us is advocate for juvenile justice rights, Mary Ellen Johnson. Welcome, Mary Ellen.
Thank you for having me, Dan.
Mary Ellen's with the Pendulum Foundation based in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And
yes.
Maybe you could talk a little bit about what your foundation does.
Well, as a nonprofit, the Pendulum Foundation is trying to take programs into the prisons for our kids who are serving life without parole. They get no prisons, they get no programs, and they get no help. We are also educating the public on the issue of kids serving life, and under our political action arm, we are trying to get sentencing reform for these kids, either through a ballot initiative or through legislation.
The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the Regents of the University of California, nor the management of KUCI. Is that different from adult prisoners? Adult prisoners get more programs, or what?
No, actually what happens is that in Colorado we have a mandatory life without parole, and anybody who gets that sentence, they are not entitled to programs, because the way Department of Corrections feels, there's a budget crunch. Of course we spend hundreds of millions, and I know California spends a lot of money on prisons, but there's a budget crunch, and only those getting out are entitled to programs. So these kids who will be spending in the next 50 or 60 years of their lives inside really aren't entitled to anything except maybe a GED.
What's the library like? I'm a librarian, what's the library like in these systems?
That's really interesting. They're not very good. I mean, even the law libraries, you know, constitutional or the federal laws state
right.
that they have to have access to the law, and they don't even have access to the law. I mean, it's a joke. It's very sad, and it's very difficult to send books into them. It's basically a nightmare. So these kids and a lot of the prisoners, but I focus specifically on the juveniles, it's very difficult for them ever to become educated. And the truth about education is those with a college degree, and we've cut out the Pell Grants and stuff, those with a college degree have like a 4% recidivism rate. Education is the key, but we're not going to do that for them either, for anybody.
How could they be sentenced to life? I mean, I didn't think that is the norm. Is that really the case?
Well, actually, California has kids that are serving life without parole. But in Colorado, there is kind of an unfortunate confluence of events, and one of them is that the prosecutors have a lot of discretion as to who they charge in the juvenile or the adult court. And so what they do is they put these kids in the adult court, and they know that they will be convicted because there's a 95% conviction rate, and then they have a mandatory life sentence. So that's the problem. The judge has no discretion. The jurors do not know that means mandatory life. And so the kids, in the meantime, are thrown away. Nobody likes the system except the prosecutors, actually.
So you're saying in California that's not the case?
No, I don't think all the time, but you do have 180 kids that are serving life. I just looked that up. But I think California has some discretion. And actually, California, you have a wonderful author out there. You know, I think he's in San Jose, John Huebner, who wrote a book about a system that is a good system in Texas for juveniles. And it's called Last Chance in Texas. So I hear a lot about California's system. I'm not that familiar with it. I have to tell you, Dan, I don't hear really good things about it. I can't speak with authority on California.
So there must be some people in there that are wrongly accused, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Wrongly convicted, yeah.
Yes, and what we're finding out, I find it so interesting that the justice system now talks about adults who are coming out after 15, 20 years or so, and they're saying that they're innocent. Well, what we found in Colorado through a series of articles, and you can access them, denverpost.com/teencrime, is that some of these kids were innocent, and a lot of them were wrongly convicted in the sense that they got no pretrial investigation. They got, some of them had no defense witnesses called. Some of them had 3-day trials. And one kid was convicted 4 years after the crime on the basis of a fingerprint on a broken pane of glass. The Greeley attorneys are going to reopen the case, but this kid has been behind bars now for almost 10 years, and he's been sitting in a supermax prison, so he's mentally ill now. So, no, we have a lot of cases like that here. I always say that the only people who believe in our justice system are people who aren't involved in it, and that's from a mother who has a son who's an attorney. I think it's pretty despicable.
So the fingerprint was there because he worked on that window before.
Yes, yes. Actually, this case was the young man, he was 13 at the time, he and his father helped this old lady paint her house, or they painted it for her. She paid him. The crime happened. 4 years later, there was an investigation saying why hasn't this mother or this woman, her killer, been found? And there were a lot of suspects. They picked up on this kid, Samuel Mendez, and he's talked about in the Denver Post articles, and they convicted him. And the jurors said later, they said, we didn't think it was right, but we went by the rules, and they say now, we wish we hadn't gone by the rules. He should not have been convicted.
What were the rules then?
Well, the rule is just that, well, if he's there at the scene of the crime, he has to be felony murder, which means that you don't even have to pull the trigger, though the prosecutor said that he did kill her. But if you're convicted of felony murder, then you also receive a mandatory life without parole sentence. And I think that's where Colorado differs from California. You are not so harsh on felony murder. Felony murder means that, you know, if there's a robbery or something involved, then the felony murder statute kicks in, and in Colorado that means mandatory life. The interesting thing is we hear about some of these cases where the police will say, well, you know, you were going to rob this person, weren't you? And the kid goes, no, I wasn't. I wasn't there. He said, yes, you were. You know, even $5. And the kid says, no, I wasn't going to do it. And by the time the police are finished talking with this kid will say, well, maybe I thought about it. And then the felony murder statute kicks in, and the kid's up for life without parole.
Good grief. I know in California we have three strikes law, and a lot of people actually are against that. And people can be put in for, you know, their third crime would be stealing a pizza or something.
I know, and I've read about that. I think that's pretty awful too.
But how is the trial conducted? It seems to me it's not under public scrutiny, right? People, it's totally secret. Can people go to juvenile court and listen?
Oh, no, because these kids are tried in the adult court.
Oh, they are tried in
the adult court. If they were tried in the juvenile court, there would only be, they'd only get a few years. But the prosecutors, most of these cases are high profile because it's very unusual for a child to kill somebody or these crimes to happen. So the minute this happens, the prosecutors say, we have a super predator here. They get a lot of press attention. The prosecutor has all the discretion in the world. There are no checks and balances for him to keep the kid in juvenile court. He kicks him up into the adult court, and then the media scrutiny is really fierce as far as this kid's a horrible kid. And, I mean, it's a foregone conclusion they're going to get convicted. We have a 95% conviction rate in Colorado, so the kid's going to get convicted. And then it's a mandatory life sentence, and the judges decry it, and the jurors spend the rest of their lives saying, I wish we had an option. Huh. We have jurors that have gotten help for post-traumatic stress disorder after these cases. Nobody wants to put a juvenile away for life, and they don't know they're putting a juvenile away for life when they vote guilty.
You can't tell them?
No, it's against the law to tell them. So.
Really? Yeah.
So, it's a crazy system. It's crazy.
Their lawyer could tell them, I guess. But the
lawyer can tell the kid, but the lawyer cannot get up at the trial and say, you know, if you convict this kid, you're sentencing him to a mandatory life sentence.
Wow.
We had one case where the judge after a kid was convicted. He came back and he said, well, I'll give the sentencing later. And the defense attorney stood up and he said, Your Honor, this is a mandatory life without parole sentence. The judge didn't even know it was a mandatory life sentence, and he was very upset.
Boy, yeah. We're talking with Mary Ellen Johnson, who's heads the Pendulum Foundation, so in Colorado, which deals with juvenile justice issues. Was there a big case? Was there a kind of a sensational case that led to the enactment of these laws?
Oh, yeah. What happened was, and I think California had this too, in 1993, we had something called the Summer of Violence here, a lot of gang killings. The media really exacerbated what was happening, and so then the legislature enacted really tough penalties. The interesting thing about the Summer of Violence is that subsequent research showed that the killings that happened, most of them weren't from teens, and there was really no real spike in violence. Yeah. But it fed in, the media focused on it, there were way more stories, and everybody was concerned. So what the legislature did is they said, we're going to get really tough on crime. They gave the DAs more discretion. They increased the life sentence. It used to be 10 years, then it was 20 years, then it was 40, to a mandatory life without parole. And these kids were caught up in it. We argue with the district attorneys all the time, and we say, some of these kids deserve a second chance. The district attorneys in Colorado are some of the most powerful in the United States. Hmm. They run the legislature, and they say, no, it's a public safety issue. You don't want killers out on the streets. And we say, you're right, we don't. We want what other states have. A lot of them come out after a certain amount of time. We want rehabilitation. We want treatment and the possibility of some of them coming out, rather than spending $2 or $3 million of the taxpayers' hard-earned tax money over the course of their lifetime per kid.
Are they housed in adult prisons?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And these kids, if they're charged at 14 and convicted at 15, they will go into an adult prison. It does not matter. A lot of states will do, they put them in a separate facility till they're 18 or 21. Colorado doesn't do that. The immediate, when they are charged as an adult, in the eyes of the law, they become an adult. When they are convicted, they go immediately into the adult prison. And what happens with over half of these kids is because they risk being raped or whatever, or they get involved with a gang so they'll be protected from the older predators, then what the Department of Corrections does is they put them in our Supermax, which is our big control unit, and where they're locked down 23 hours out of the day. They never go outside. I mean, it's like your shoe. It's like Pelican Bay in California.
Yeah.
And these kids are there forever. We had one kid, he just got out, and he got out into general population. He was there for 8.5 years in solitary. We've got over half of our kids have served at least some time at this place. And a lot of them, we get letters from them now where they're going, how can we get out of here? And they're not coming out, I can tell you that. I mean, I've seen tapes of them because we can't visit them. And they're mentally ill now. If they weren't mentally ill when they went into the control unit, they're mentally ill now. And these are kids. We've got kids that went into CSP at 16, 17, 18 years of age into the control unit. I mean, to me, it's a horror. We look at other nations and we say, what are you doing over there? Human rights abuses? Excuse me.
Right.
We've got them here, and it's happening to children.
Oh, sure, yeah. How do you get the tapes? You said you got tapes.
We have tapes. The Human Rights Watch came in, and they taped them. So, we don't have the tapes. If anybody was interested if they wanted to do a program on this, they could write to the Human Rights Watch, and if the kids give permission, and they do, usually, then you could look at the tapes or have them for public viewing. But, they're really, really frightening. And the one thing that Pendulum Foundation does that most other advocacy organizations don't do is that we're in very close close contact with our kids who are serving life, and we're also in contact with their families. So I feel like I know most of them.
Right.
And, you know, there are some of these kids that, and some of them are, you know, they're anywhere from 21 now to there's somebody in there who's 40. But they're, you know, most of those kids, I know that they could have a second chance, and you know, my heart goes out to them. But I will say this, there's some of them, maybe 10% or whatever, that they are not coming out, and they shouldn't. Some of them are psychopaths, but it's a very, very small percentage, maybe 5 to 10%.
How many of those were wrongly accused and wrongly convicted, do you think?
Well, see, in my estimation, I have to say probably 100% because I don't believe in the mandatory life sentence.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I would, you know, that's where I come from. But I would say the ones who got terrible trials, et cetera, and poor defense lawyering, I'd say 95% because most of them are poor. Mm-hmm. And a disproportionate minority, of course, are Black and Hispanic, though we've got, we even have one very wealthy white boy in who was sent away for life, and he was sent away for merely being there when another kid killed his mother, and the kid was very badly abused, and he was charged as a complicitor, meaning that he just had to be of a like mind with the person who killed his mother. I mean, they're really these murky laws and contortions, and so you just don't, I mean, it's just crazy. But I would say what bothers me the most about the system is our myth, which is, oh, these kids all get a fair trial because they have public defenders or people, and they get a good trial. No, the public defenders are very overworked. You know, we have cases where investigators didn't even investigate the crime. Nobody cares. And when we go before the legislature, the DAs will say, they all were convicted by a jury of their peers. They heard all the evidence. And I just want to get up and scream, no, they didn't hear all the evidence, because all the evidence is not allowed in court. And all the evidence isn't even found. And because, you know, they have crappy investigations. Our system is broken. The system for juveniles, and actually for all of prison, but I'm not going to get into that, it's broken across the United States. We are draining money from higher education. We are draining money from roads. We are draining money from everything to keep people incarcerated who should not be incarcerated. And that includes these kids. You know, when you are an adult and you commit a brutal crime or whatever, that's a different story. These kids, a lot of them were involved, like, with gangs and stuff, but what people don't know, it's not your stereotypical, you know, gang banger that, you know, he's 300 pounds and you're terrified of him and he's really a bad dude. These are kids that come from broken families, and, you know, they're kind of hanging out with what we would just call friends before. Some of them are getting, you know, high on marijuana or whatever. But you know, it's not your hardcore kids. And the interesting thing about a lot of these kids is when they get involved with older people and gang members, the older guys will turn on the younger ones, and the older guys will have committed more heinous crimes, and they will get plea bargained and serve little or no time while these kids get life. I mean, it's just amazing to me what the system does.
How does the civil liberties groups, other groups in Colorado, deal with this?
Well, that's another case where we are they're very overburdened. They've tried to do some things, but they haven't done a lot. Now, the Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International, they have been extremely supportive. And tomorrow, the Pendulum Foundation is holding a news press conference at the state capitol, and Amnesty International will be there. And those two organizations are also putting together a nationwide drive, which will certainly include California and people from there, to overturn life without parole for kids.
Wow. How about ACLU? Did they do anything on this issue?
They do their best, but actually they haven't done anything on kids specifically. No, they haven't. Because I keep saying, how can this be constitutional, too? I mean,
cruel, unusual punishment.
But you know what? The courts always rule that it is not cruel and unusual punishment. They've ruled it. And with our felony murder, which just means, you know, you can be there and not do anything, we have some of the worst felony murder laws in the United States, and the courts consistently rule that they are constitutional. When people say you can always appeal and, you know, whatever, I just shake my head because the reality is so different than from our myth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I used to believe, you know, about our justice system and all this, and I look at people now and I just say, do you really know what happens? It's just like when people used to say that prisons are country clubs, and I would say, have you ever visited a prison? Because I can tell you that the prisons for anybody are pretty horrible places, but when I go to prison and I visit one of the kids who is serving life, and I see our other young kids there, and I think, you know, I can't think of a worse fate. And my son, who's an appeals attorney, he's working on an appeal for one of these kids, and a reporter asked him, he said, you know, where do you see Nathan, who killed his mother? He said, where do you see Nathan in 5 or 6 years? And my son said, I could see Nathan on a college campus. He said, this kid does not deserve to be here. You know, we've got kids like Nathan and my friend who killed their abusers, and these kids, because they killed parents that were sexually and physically and emotionally abusive to them, these kids tried to go through the authorities, they tried to go through social services, they tried to go through teachers, and Dan, nobody did anything. And so the kids who were afraid for their lives, they killed their abusers, and they got life without parole. And what we say, and I always say this, you know, there are cases where, and there was a case several years ago, where a mother whose child was molested, she went into the courtroom when the guy was testifying, and she shot that child molester. She got little or no time behind bars, and I say, okay, we have sympathy for somebody who kills a child molester, and we all say, oh, you know, if that were my child, I'd kill him. If somebody hurt my child... Well, here are these kids, these two kids, Nathan and Jacob, in Colorado, and they killed their abuser, and what we say is, sorry, you get life without parole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think it's extremely unfair.
The ACLU is now headed by legal director Mark Silverstein in Colorado.
Yes, he is.
And when in California, when he was with the ACLU of Southern California, he handled a case where the police were taking pictures of Asian kids in Orange County, and I worked with that case. And,
oh, really?
And he got the police to change their practices. The ACLU filed a lawsuit against the Garden Grove Police Department on behalf of several Southeast Asian kids, mostly Vietnamese.
Well, you know, the ACLU does a really good job. I think, unfortunately, is... that, you know, the money is always tight. And, you know, Dan, there are so many abuses. Where do you start?
I know.
I mean, that's the sad thing. They're always, people lambaste ACLU, the really conservative people, and they don't know that they are there fighting for everybody's rights. But there are so many places where people need help. And, you know, it isn't just these kids. And so what the ACLU in Colorado has to do is they prioritize by, you know, how easily they think that they can overturn the laws, et cetera.
Right.
And it's tough. It's tough. We do not have... People are not interested in this. Colorado's a very interesting state. I love it. It's beautiful. It's all of that. But compared to... You know, I look at California, and I think you have some progressive people out there. Colorado is tougher on crime than places like Texas for kids.
Wow.
And, you know, I just... The legislators, they are so straitjacketed in this conservative mindset. Oh, you don't raise taxes, you don't do this, you know, you're tough on crime, and they don't even think; they just talk. And you know, and it's extremely frustrating. And so, you know, the Pendulum Foundation has said if we have to, we'll do a ballot initiative. But I do not want to lambaste all the legislators, because a conservative legislator. Her name is Lynn Heffley, and she is the wife of Congressman Joel Heffley, who actually took on Tom DeLay in the ethics, and he voted against Tom DeLay. She has run bills on our behalf for the last 3 years, and she is a champion for these kids. The problem is that we have a governor who thinks there's nothing wrong with the system, who does not give pardons or commutations, who says, you know, we don't care. And again, we have the DAs who cowed the legislature. So we're kind of at an impasse. She is introducing a bill that says 40 years before they can apply for parole. And what the Pendulum Foundation is saying is that's a distinction without a difference. You know, there's...
Yeah, that's too long.
Yeah, it's too long. And then they'll be dead. I mean, then they'd be coming out by the time they're 60 years old. And I say, that'd be like plunking me from the 60s into the 2005. I wouldn't know what to do. And these kids, I mean, that would be cruel and unhuman. So, so that's where we stand.
We're talking with Mary Ellen Johnson, who's the head of Pendulum Foundation, talking about teenagers in who are sentenced and for life in prison. This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, Subversity Show. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the regents of the University of California nor the management of KUCI. What's the ethnic breakdown of the young people that were originally put in for life?
Oh, that's interesting, because I was looking at this morning, I think it's like... 26% that is African American. When you put in Asian, Indian, the Hispanic, it's like, I think about 75% minority and 25% white. When you add them all, the way they add it up is they just use African American, and then it's, I think it's 25% or 26% are African American, and we are one of the top five states for the disproportionate number of minorities serving life. But if you add them all in, it's even worse. I mean, because we've got, I think we have 13 African Americans that are serving life, and then we have 12 Hispanics. So I mean, it's really a horrible breakdown of minorities.
How many Asians?
I think we have one, and actually I've been in touch with his family, and his family live out in California. His name is George Liu, and it seemed like really nice people. And, you know, George was caught up in a gang, and I don't think that he even killed anybody. I mean, he was just there at the time. Really, really nice family, and it's so sad because they don't understand. Do not understand what's happening.
Is it a Vietnamese family?
Pardon?
Is it a Vietnamese family?
I think it is. Yeah, I think so. I think so. And actually, I'm not even sure how George got to Colorado. And I've talked with his sisters and several times, and his mother, I don't even think speaks English, so they translate for her. Hmm. And it's so difficult because I can hear the pain in her voice, and she just does not understand.
Yeah,
she can't
sure.
understand what is happening. It just seems so unjust, and you can't explain these rules and laws to her.
So is there any... how do you... You can't get in to visit them, right? Usually. unless they are the clients of a lawyer, I suppose.
Well, what really happens is that... Colorado is actually pretty good about letting reporters in.
Oh.
And, I mean... If you go to DenverPost.com, you can see pictures of all the young men, and we've had quite a bit of publicity. However, when it comes to visiting them in the control units, which I think that's where you really see hardcore time, they don't allow reporters really in there. And as far as, you know, if somebody came in and said, I'd like to meet with one of these kids from the outside. There's a whole long paper trail you have to do. And also, Department of Corrections in Colorado has a rule that unless you knew the person before they committed the crime and before they were convicted, you are not allowed to visit. So what that means is most of these kids that are serving life, and they had no life before they went in, so they don't have a very big support system or social system, mm-hmm. then most of them never get visits. And as they age, you know, their families die, and they'll never have visitors. However, some of the facilities have waived that, and so occasionally they'll let people in. But DOC's policy is no, you can't visit somebody unless you knew them before they were convicted.
How many days of visiting is it open?
It's open, it depends on the facility. Mm. If you're in a control unit, you get 1 to 4 visits a month. Mm. They allow the family members, and that's behind glass for 1 to 3 hours. If you're in a regular facility, you can visit Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, and it's usually from 12 to 5, but you can't go in each day. You can pick one day, and I think there's a way you can do 2 days, but so it's fairly limited. But I do have to say, I used to visit in a control unit. It was horrible. And so now that my friend is out in general population, it's very nice to me. I mean, it's like a cafeteria. You can sit there and you can touch them and you can buy them food and stuff like that. So to me, that's a wonderful step up, because I'm in control units. And the young man that I know, his name is Jacob Eind, and he killed his parents when he was 15, and I met him because my daughter knew him, and I wrote a book about him that you can find on Amazon.com. It's called The Murder of Jacob. But that's how I got involved in the issue. And at the time, years ago, I mean, it's been 12 years, I thought, you know, this is wrong, but I didn't know other kids got life without parole, and now I know that close to 50 have life without parole in Colorado.
What do you think of the, talking about California now, the prison uprisings riots that have taken place?
I don't know enough about California to be able to say much, and I'm really torn because I hear really horrible things about the teachers, the correctional officers union, and I don't know firsthand. And see, I'm a very strong union person, but I only knew people through labor unions.
Right.
So, but it sounds as if what everybody says, all the reformers say, is that they have a lot of power.
For sure.
And that there need to be reforms done. And I have seen, you know, they show stuff that happens. And I think the sadness for me for California, because it is a beautiful state with, and I think, wonderful people, is that you are sacrificing your future to keep a lot of these people behind bars, and there has to be a better way to do it, because, you know, your higher education is suffering, all of that is suffering. You need to take, I believe, you need to take a second look, not only at the juveniles, but that this 3 strikes, you're out, you know, a lot of this stuff, because it really is true. People are serving time stealing a piece of pizza. That's not what was intended initially, and everybody pays for that. I wish people would understand that. Well, and it's that way throughout America. You know, we think that, if you don't fund childhood education or programs, then we don't need those. Well, then you pay for it later. If we do not take care of kids when they're little, they are going to end up in the system. And you know, for us to look at people and be gone, I don't care if they're serving life for, you know, a 3 strikes, you're out. We don't care. What they don't realize is they are paying for that in crappy roads, in, you know, increased tuition for their children, in all of those ways. So it is a ripple effect throughout the economy. And I have talked with people who say that the governor is interested in some sort of change in the juvenile system. I hope that that's
right,
true,
right.
And that he actually, that some of his people actually went to the Giddings School in Texas, which is a, you know, like it's the nation's jewel for dealing with violent kids. And I don't know enough about the governor to know, you know, what's true and what's not. But then I hear other people who say that it would be very difficult to get it through the legislature. I don't know. I don't know, but I wish you guys well, because, you know, you can't continue doing what you're doing. I mean, I don't see how you can, because of the drain on the public treasury of prisons.
Yeah, I believe this, for the last few years, the more has been spent on prisons than on higher education. or education?
Well, that is a shame. And I was told by somebody in Department of Corrections, they said, because Colorado's getting close to that, and he said, I think the tipping point will be when we spend more on prisons than we do on college, but you're telling me, Dan, that didn't work in California. They're still building the prisons, huh? I mean, are people outraged or not? I mean, do people even care?
No, I think the LA Times had a reporter that was covering some of this, but I'm not sure he's doing the same beat now. And so, I mean, some of this has to do with public exposure, and, you know, it's just people are more interested in, you know, Cheney shooting his friend than in some real issues.
Well, we laugh in Colorado because we say, and it's not funny, but Laura Bush, when she was young, she was involved in a tragic accident and somebody was killed. We say if that had been Laura in Colorado, she would have gotten life without parole because we do have a kid who actually was involved in a traffic accident, a black kid. Wow. He got life without parole. And we say Dick Cheney, if he'd have been he were a kid and arrested in Colorado, or that happened in Colorado, he'd have been arrested for attempted murder. So, you know, but yeah, we really aren't. And we at the Pendulum Foundation have tried so hard, and we've worked so hard with reporters and people, because we believe that the only way to get this done is for us to make it an issue. And people will say, why should we care about 50 kids? And I say, as I always do, because it will cost you probably $1 billion before they die, but it also says something about the way we treat our children, says something about who we are as a society. But the other thing is that it's just not putting them behind bars for murder. With the laws the way they are now, a child can be snapped up into the adult system for a lot of different things, and so their kid could be gone into the adult system for a property crime. And we actually, in other states, they do have a couple of kids that are serving life without parole for property crimes. Then didn't even have anything to do with a murder. Nothing.
How about for sex? Like, if they were playing with another teenager, have both of them been arrested at all? Is that
anything? For sex?
Yeah, nothing like
now,
that.
Yeah, you know, that's very interesting, because our sex offender laws are changing too. And I've talked with some defense attorneys, and they really have a problem with our laws regarding sex between juveniles. And this guy, I got a perfect example from a public defender, and he said that 15-year-old boy and his 14-year-old girlfriend have sex. And I mean, it's consensual. They're young, but they have consensual sex. Girl goes home, father finds out about it. She gets scared, and she said, well, he forced me to do it. So then what happens is they go arrest the 15-year-old boy, and they tell him, and you can do this in Colorado, if you do not plead guilty to this offense, we will direct file you into the adult system, as we can do in Colorado, and you will be facing, 10 to life. So this kid theoretically could serve a life sentence for having sex with his 14-year-old girlfriend. So what they say, what the defense attorneys will say, and that's why they hate direct file, they'll tell the kid, you know, you're over a barrel here, because if we say, no, you're innocent, they will direct file you into adult court and you face life. So what you have to do is take the plea, and then you'll be labeled a sex offender. And with everything that goes with that. So it's like, I am so disappointed in our justice system, because I think it is so unjust.
For sure.
It makes no sense. It makes no sense.
How about the Colorado Springs? Is it the birthplace of the religious right, or part of? I don't know how to describe it, but it's one of the sites. You know, you would think that they would care about children, no?
I live about 25 minutes from Focus on the Family, and yes, we are with Focus on the Family, the Reverend Ted Haggard with the New Life Church down here, which has 10,000 members, and he may run for Congress. And it's very interesting to me, because the area that I live in actually is the hardest on kids. They are the meanest, the toughest, the least Christian, the least compassionate, and I go, I do not understand. because, you know, we are talking about Jesus here and about compassion and about suffer unto the children. You know, all of those things that Jesus talks about, and why are they so mean and so angry and so judgmental? I do not understand it, but I do see it. We're dealing with right now focus on the family, and they want to put a gay marriage issue on the ballot, and so I mean it's always that kind of stuff. But what I have seen is that there are glimmerings among the evangelicals, and they have been really hardcore, but there are glimmerings where they're saying, you know what, this isn't right. So there are little bitty, I can see a crack now where some people are going, we don't think this is right. And you know, one of the reasons, Dan, the last kid in Colorado Springs who was convicted and is serving life without parole, his parents were evangelical Christians, and they were members of the New Life Church. And they used to tell me,
home.
Would say, we don't understand. And I would say, you know, go to the members of your church and have them talk to the district attorney. And I said, this is about compassion.
Uh-huh.
And you know what they told me? They said, we couldn't do that. They'd never support us. So they got no support from their church.
Oh.
This kid fried. I mean, he's serving life without parole. He's been down now about 3 or 4 months.
Why was he convicted? I mean, what was he convicted for?
Well, actually, he was convicted, I believe, of felony murder, and that's another interesting case where this kid he was with an older guy, and the kid's attorney says the older guy did it, and all the evidence points that he did it. But the jury looked at this kid, and remember, there's a Colorado Springs jurors. They know that there's only one way of looking at the world, and it is, you know, through very judgmental eyes. They said, no, we don't believe that. This kid did it, and, you know, they deliberated 2 hours, I think. And they came back, and they said, this kid is guilty. And and the kid's serving life without parole. I think now he's 19. He's serving life.
Wow.
So to me, too, is this is everybody's problem, because what this family can't get over, they're going, wait a minute, we're good people. We're good Christian people. How can this happen to us? And I just keep, I tell them, you know, number one, is that it doesn't mean that anybody's a horrible person to have these sorts of things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes things happen. But, you know, just because you pray and just because you say you believe in a certain God does not mean that bad things aren't going to happen to you, or that learning things aren't going to happen to you, because we are not spared just because we have this faith. And then, you know, then they lose their faith or whatever. But, oh, yeah, I love my town, and you know, right now I'm looking outside at the mountains. I love Colorado, but if anything could make me leave this state, it would be our evangelical friends 20 minutes away from me, because this is a very, very tough area.
Well, you would think that there would be some common ground, since they send missionaries over to, you know, some other continents to save the children, starving children, but they don't do that.
No.
in America.
Well, I have to tell you this, and I don't mean to offend anybody. I almost feel like I can speak more freely because I'm talking to California than if I were talking to Colorado. But one of the things that disturbs me about the prison right now is that Colorado doesn't have any paid chaplains, so they don't have anybody who can go into the prison, whether they're Muslim or Buddhist or whatever. Mm. So the evangelicals have a huge presence because they have a lot of money. They have a huge, huge presence in the system. And so what is happening is they are converting all of these young prisoners and all the prisoners to evangelical Christianity. The problem that I have with that is that, number one, they don't allow for other religions. I mean, we have Muslims in there, it makes it very difficult for them to get any sort of, they make it very difficult for them. We have pagans, we have Wiccans, we have Catholics, we have, you know, all of this, but the evangelicals have a foothold. They get special privileges, and, you know, and they can go in where other people can't. And then the thing that bothers me the most about them, number one, is they bring these prisoners to God, their version of God, through fear, which I don't, America has too much fear right now anyway. I mean, we all are afraid. The next bombing attack, all of this stuff. They bring them through fear that you're a bad person, you're going to go to hell because of what you did, so you better repent. So these people repent and they get religion. And then the evangelicals are not interested in helping them in the outer world. They mm-hmm. just chalk up, oh, another soul for Christ, and they move along. What I think that Christ does, Christ ministered to the poor inside in the prisons, and he instructed his disciples to go into the prisons. And that's what I say. It's not just about saving souls
right.
inside prison. You need to bring them programs. You need to make their conditions better. I mean, let's feed not only the soul, let's feed the body and the spirit too. And so, and that's the problem that I have, because it's like, oh, well, they've been saved, so I don't have to worry about them. Well, you know, I think that we do. We have an obligation to everybody in the system, I believe, to not only, you know, save their souls, but to save their sanity as well. And that requires caring about their, spirit and about their emotional well-being.
For sure. I know even in the county jails here in Orange County, they have library books that are pushed on a cart, or they had. And that's how we got one of the young people we were helping with, and one of the he was accused of being in an Asian gang, and we helped him. Actually, he got out eventually, but the he copped a plea, and we helped him in the case. But he found a book that was written by one of our members and had an address that he could write to. And so he was able to make connection, and that's how that happened. But in terms of Colorado, isn't there a distinction, though, even in California, between federal prisons and state prisons?
Yes.
Because federal, you have to, there's constitutional guarantees of certain
yes.
services, right?
Yeah, and there are. And also, yeah, and they have a different sentencing structure. And, you know, we even have the I think one of the worst supermaxes in the United States in the federal system, which has, I think, the Shoe Bomber, Ted Kaczynski. It used to have John Gotti, all that. And that's down in Canyon City. But, yeah, it is different for the federal system. And I think the federal system, I think they do have more perks and things. And, again, what I feel very strongly with the state system, you're right about the reading. When these guys can learn to read, and, you know, they usually have a fourth grade education, but, for example, my friend Jacob, what his job is right now is he teaches other prisoners to read, which I think is great. But it is about education, and there are certain books that I think I'd love to get into them, really simple books, so that they could think a different way, because, you know, they're in this cycle of, you know, I'm sorry for what I did, but I shouldn't be here, you know, and all that, to help them break out of whatever cycle they're in. And mm-hmm. I think that the answer is through reading, through transformational things. The Pendulum Foundation, with our programs, we're trying, there's a prison Dharma network that teaches meditation. We're mm-hmm. going to get volunteers in there to do that. We have another one that deals with, we have three programs that deal with different ways of teaching them how to solve problems and look at the world. We try not to have it to be sectarian. It should be non-sectarian. Sure. And that in conjunction, I don't care what people believe, but if we can give them that in conjunction with whether they're a Catholic or an evangelical or a Wiccan or whatever, if we can help them that way to give them the tools, then, you know, I always say, if we can transform their internal lives, it doesn't matter about their outer, but it's very difficult to transform their internal when Department of Corrections is very careful about, they don't like changes in programs or things, but however, they have told me privately, they don't like the idea of kids serving life without parole, and they will help us take programs into the prison. So we'll see. We'll see. I don't know.
But isn't there used to be this feeling that, you know, that in the juvenile justice system, it's rehabilitation, but in the adult
yeah.
system, it's like throwing away the key.
Yeah. Well, and see, that's why it's so interesting, because in other states that have direct file, they'll still say, you know, you have to prove that this kid can't be rehabilitated. And that's very hard to do, because kids can be rehabilitated. I believe adults can be rehabilitated.
Sure.
But kids can be rehabilitated. So in Colorado, we don't have that. So the DAs just say, this is a heinous crime, can't be rehabilitated, and they, you know, they throw them away. But the truth of it is that even in the adult system, they can be rehabilitated. And for people who believe in, you know, in a higher power, in Christianity, or any of the religions, I mean, isn't it all about, to me, mercy, compassion, real justice? And I believe that there is no way that we can look at one person and say, you know, you're okay and you're not, so we're going to throw you away. I don't believe in throwaway people, and I certainly don't believe in throwaway children.
I know the Quakers did a report. I did a show on this called Is it Rehabilitative Justice or Restorative Justice?
Mm-hmm.
Where they argue that, you know, regardless of what you do, you want to reach out and talk
yes.
to somebody because
yes.
there's always hope. To change, yeah.
And what's happening in Colorado, too, and I have a very good friend who wants to take restorative justice even into the schools so that before, you know, it's just to help on a lower level. But that's absolutely true. You want to restore people to the community. And what bothers me about our present system is that, it, you know, they say that they care about victims, but they don't, because when they... The only victims that they'll talk to are victims who want vengeance. And the victims who are going, you know, I want restorative justice here. I don't think this kid should be thrown away, but I want to know why he did it, or I want to look him in the eye and talk to him. Well, when that happens and you prepare the victim and the offender to do that, it's extremely powerful, cathartic, forgiveness happens, etc. We don't want to do that here in Colorado. And some of the people who have been the most against some of our law are trying to change the law are the victims groups. And I get upset, and I'll say it because it's California and not Colorado, and I go, you know, if the victims are really interested in healing, it can't just be about locking them up and throwing away the key. But victims have an enormous amount of power as long as they're on the DA side in Colorado. If they're not,
for sure.
You know, if they're not, then they just ignore them. And I've had victims say, we don't believe in these sentences, but the DA shut them up. But no, I don't... I think for all of America, where we have to start coming from is forgiveness and compassion. I don't do it enough, and I know across America we don't. I mean, I'm very sad for what's happening in America. This is not the country I envisioned it to be, and that's why I call on people like you and everybody. We can make it better. We can, and we can restore. We can have forgiveness and compassion. We can do it. We have to do it, because if we don't, we're doomed.
Yeah, I think so. I think the best example of the restorative justice, I think, and compassion is the case of this, I think, Amy Beale, who went to South Africa as a Fulbright fellow and and was killed. And her parents reached out to the killers and actually hired them to work in the Amy Beale Foundation.
Wow.
And I once interviewed the parent once at a film showing. There's a movie made about that, Long Journey Into Day, about I think it's includes testimony from the parents at the South African the commission that looked into the crimes of the apartheid period, and how the parents testified about the need to basically
we have to forgive.
Yeah, forgive, and they did forgive. And I talked to them during the film showing at the after the film showing at the Newport Beach Film Festival, and they had there were people there from their foundation from South Africa that they've hired, and they've set up a nonprofit to help people in South Africa to continue the work of their daughter.
See, that's real forgiveness. That's where we need to come from. And to that end, you guys have two wonderful filmmakers out in California, too, that did a documentary on this issue. It's called Juvies. We've shown it here in Colorado. And if you go to juvies.net, you could even book them. But it's narrated by Mark Wahlberg, but it talks about what happens to kids in California once they get into the adult system. And the producer and director, and if you want their information, I can give it to you off air. But they are wonderful, and they talk about forgiveness and compassion. That's what we have to do. There has to be healing for everybody. And I remind myself of that because I get very angry at the legislators. You can tell I get angry at the district attorneys, at a lot of different people. And I go, but wait a minute, Mary Ellen. This is about compassion, and you need to learn to forgive, too. And you also need to learn that they believe what they're saying, a lot of them, and also that you need there are commonalities. Come together over the commonalities, because then we'll get things done. We are all, you know, in this together. I believe we are all connected. And, you know, when I treat somebody poorly, whether it's a district attorney or my dog, I mean, it reflects badly on all of us, and that's what I keep reminding myself. And just the fact that I'm talking with you in California, you know, maybe some of these seeds will be planted here or, you know, someplace else to get us all to work together, because we have to do it. We have to do it. The voices have to rise up from the grassroots, because it's not happening from the top down. I mean, the Tookie Williams case was a perfect example from my perspective when I looked at that, and I don't have a strong opinion on it, but when I read what the governor had to say denying his pardon or whatever, I just thought, you know what, to me it's politics. It really doesn't have to. Tookie could have said he did it. He could have, you know, whatever. He could have done everything, and the governor would have come back and said no, because it's politics. And that's the thing that bothers me the most about what I do, is I say this, I don't deal much with politicians because I'm not good at it. And I say I would rather talk and spend time with any prisoner than any politician, because I know where the prisoners are coming from. And, you know, I can look at them and I can see what they've done. With the politicians, it's very different to me. And again, that's why I don't deal much with the legislature. I think it has to change. We have to look at this not as a political issue, but as a human rights issue. And what we do to the least among us, you know, we do to all of us.
We've been talking with Mary Ellen Johnson with the Pendulum Foundation. Maybe to close, you could give the web address of your foundation.
Yes, we just updated our the Pendulum Foundation, so I'm thrilled. It's www.pendulumfoundation.com. If you want to check out the Juvies website, it's juvies.net. So I appreciate you having me on, Dan.
Thank you very much. This is the end of our show. We're out of time. Thank you, Mary Ellen.
Thank you so much, Dan. Okay, bye.
This is Subversity Show on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show were not necessarily those of the regents of the University of California, nor the management of KUCI. Stay tuned for a blue show coming up. To check our website, go to kuci.org/tilde, DTSANG, and web versions, audio versions, MP3 versions of our previous shows and this show will be posted on that site.